This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. And this is the sound of Foley Square in downtown Manhattan Friday, not far from our offices, the epicenter of a worldwide climate strike led, improbably perhaps, but solidly, by millions of students.
We want change! We want change! We want change!
The 16-year-old Swedish activist Greta Thunberg, who sailed across the Atlantic to ramp up pressure ahead of the United Nations Climate Action Summit, took the lead in the last week, testifying before Congress and rallying young activists.
I'm urging all of you to take part in the global climate strikes on September 20th and 27th. And just one last thing, see you on the streets.
In the U.S., the strikers are arrayed in support of a House resolution introduced in February by Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Senator Ed Markey, known by most as the Green New Deal, or as Speaker Nancy Pelosi dubbed it last year, the Green Dream or whatever, to which AOC replied,
"No, I think it is a green dream. It is. It is. And I think that all great American programs, everything from the Great Society to the New Deal, started with a vision for our future."
Like FDR's wide-ranging government response to the Great Depression called the New Deal, the Green New Deal also puts employment and economic equality front and center. There are other echoes of the 30s as well in the form of collective action. Depression-era sit-down strikes are mirrored by the youth-led Sunrise Movement, which organized a sit-in at Pelosi's office, demanding democratic debate and action.
If you don't know what Sunrise is, we are building an army of young people to stop the climate crisis and create millions of good jobs for our generation in the process. Yeah! Yeah, that's what we're here to do.
That's Varshini Prakash, Sunrise co-founder, at a conference called Designing the Green New Deal held in Philadelphia last week. But wait, why jobs?
The way in which the jobs versus environment fight has been set up largely by elites who tend to have no skin in the game and are the ones profiting off of that has been hurting us for decades.
And so this hour, we'll be addressing how the issues of climate change and economic inequality, once seen as distinct and even in conflict, have, for this generation, come to overlap. And the response reverberates with the echoes of economic injustice of a time long ago, but never gone. In recent years, strikes have seen a resurgence.
Public schools across the state of West Virginia are closed again today as a massive teacher strike enters day 9, making it the longest in the state's history.
In 2018, teacher strikes spread across half a dozen states. And then
thousands of Marriott workers are on strike in San Francisco, Oakland, San Jose, and other cities across the country. The workers say they're demanding livable wages so they don't have to work several jobs to pay the bills.
As I read this, another is on the horizon of hospital and medical workers.
Union organizers have said that as many as 80,000 Kaiser employees nationwide could go on strike in October if a deal isn't reached soon.
And at GM, contract negotiations have already broken down.
Jobs! Security!
Union auto workers started gathering around midnight at this Detroit General Motors plant and others like it across the country.
We want to be paid fairly. We make quality cars and we want quality pay.
The strike comes after GM's 2015 labor deal with the union expired Saturday over fault lines ranging from wages to health care coverage.
We stood up for GM when they needed us. We deserve a fair contract because we've helped make this company what it is.
At the height of the Great Recession, GM got an $11 billion bailout. Everyone seemed to be taking their lumps to save the company. Workers negotiated a contract that allowed for a two-tier system. New workers would earn less than the older ones for the same work. After GM brought in record profits last year, the time of shared sacrifice would appear to be over.
Tonight, all work has stopped at more than 50 General Motors factories and warehouses. More than 48,000 workers are on strike. That's the first against GM in 12 years.
Like they did this week, during a previous period of depressed labor conditions, GM workers left the assembly line.
What observers describe as the most crucial battle in American labor history, involving nearly 100,000 men, has practically shut down the entire American motor industry.
Anger swelled well into the Roosevelt administration, and over a year after workers around the country had earned the right to collectively bargain.
Lamar's, Iowa, storm center of the farmers' revolt, is under martial law as National Guardsmen seek the ringleaders of the mob that took Judge Bradley from this courthouse and threatened to hang him unless he swore he would sign no more mortgage foreclosures.
Now here's where the existential parallels between then and now are manifest. It wasn't just that American farmers were poor. Their demands on the land had made the once great plains poor too. The land, hatchmarked by railways and homesteads, denuded by deep plowing of native grasslands, had turned the topsoil into black, billowing clouds of dust. And so 5 years into the Great Depression, as historian Jill Lepore has written, quote, farm families displaced by debt and drought wandered westward, carrying what they could in dust-covered jalopies. The experiment in democracy that had begun with American independence seemed on the very edge of defeat. But in March 1933, a new president offered remedies for what ailed the nation, symptom by symptom.
In May 1933, a new chapter was written in American public policy. An act was passed creating the TVA, the Tennessee Valley Authority. Their method was to control nature not by defying her, as in the wasteful past, but by understanding her and harnessing her in the service of humanity.
Vital to the communities which they serve are the thousands of miles of highways constructed and improved by the Works Program.
To address worker unrest came the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938, and before it, the National Labor Relations Act.
By this act, employers are bound to bargain collectively with an organized majority of their workers.
And here's another potential link from the past to the present, the increasingly effective call to collective action. Because, though conventional wisdom says that Roosevelt bestowed workers with a voice as yet another New Deal remedy, an elixir from the Oval Office, Jane McAlevey, writer and longtime labor organizer, explains that that's not how it happened.
Yeah, no, that's a little upside down. When American workers won the National Labor Relations Act, that was because in 1933 and 1934, in the beginning of 1935, American workers waged extraordinary mini general strikes all over the United States to put the kind of pressure on FDR to give American workers the right to pull up as legal equals to the bargaining table with their employers. That was not given on high from FDR. In fact, a lot of the profound changes during the civil rights movement happened for the same reason. We have the tapes that show President Johnson on the phone with Martin Luther King.
On that, and I'm going to do my best to get other men to do likewise, and I'll have to have y'all's help. I never needed more than I do now.
Well, you know you have it, and just feel free to call on us for anything.
You better go create a lot of holy hell down there in the South so that I have the ability to do it. That's exactly what was happening in the 1930s in the New Deal. When FDR took over, he did a bunch of other things that were urgent and important. The Civilian Conservation Corps, the Works Progress Administration. I mean, there's a very long list of things that happened in the first 100 days. The National Labor Relations Act was not in the first 100 days. It was 1935 in the summer, 2 years into it, right? And it happened as a result of workers standing up for themselves and creating a crisis through massive strikes.
But in the years since the New Deal, we've seen labor decline in prominence. I mean, starting with the Taft-Hartley Act, right, in 1947, which restricted the activities and the power of the unions. You have right-to-work laws, which undermine the very structure of the unions. So why are we seeing all these strikes now?
I think you're seeing the strikes now because we are at the same level of grotesque income inequality that we were in during the Great Depression. You had 25% of America unemployed in 1932. What's similar and different in 2018 when the strikes began, in 2019 and heading into 2020 in this crucial year, is that we definitely have 25% as an index of misery. It's that corporations are more sophisticated today. So it's not rampant unemployment, it's rampant underemployment. What American workers transformed in the auto plants in 1936 and 1937 by walking out in massive strikes were conditions that look a lot like the average Amazon warehouse job today, where workers are paid substandard wages, don't get bathroom breaks. Workers are working two jobs, two and a half jobs, just to keep up and try and pay the bills. And that level of frustration is hitting a wall in this country right now.
I have to ask you, though, again, why strikes, given the state of the unions? In fact, you've noted that the word strike itself is on the rise.
Yeah. The strike that really began all of the strikes we're seeing was, in some ways, the very bold action taken by the teachers in Chicago in 2012, the first really big strike in decades.
Negotiations with public school officials now entering a second day. Mayor Rahm Emanuel saying teachers are making the wrong choice to strike, with 350,000 students paying the ultimate price.
And that strike kind of reawakened a lot of people. It began to do what organizers call raising the expectations of American workers, in that case teachers, that they could fight and win and demand more. And they did in Chicago.
Many people at the time were talking about how they were overpaid, spoiled brats, and so on. And yet the public did seem to stand with them.
When we were talking about what happened from Taft-Hartley until now, Ronald Reagan comes in, essentially fires 12,000 striking workers in the early 1980s to let Americans know you go on strike, you're going to get fired.
They are in violation of the law, and if they do not report for work within 48 hours, they have forfeited their jobs and will be terminated.
And that really brings down strike activity for the next 25 years or so. There had been this narrative for 30 years that the public wouldn't stand with people when they went on strike and got fired. So when the Chicago strike happened and you saw the outpouring of support, it began to re-raise workers' expectations that, hey, even though they feel really beaten down, they actually have a lot of public support. And when you fast forward to West Virginia, they were the first ones to walk out in this new era of all the strikes we're seeing. When I interviewed a lot of those workers, one, they had met the Chicago teachers. They actually went to find them and seek them out. And two, the place where a lot of them met was the 2016 Sanders campaign. Hmm. And if you look in West Virginia, he won every single county. And a lot of these young teachers, when Trump won, said to themselves, wait a minute, we built an amazing movement. What are we going to do now? And then right at that moment, the state legislature in West Virginia announced that they were going to take huge cuts. They were going to have to pay $200 to $400 more per month for their health care, and they were going to get a 1% raise. Hmm. And they said, that's it. We're out of here. And they began to do real grassroots organizing work, teacher to teacher, bus driver to teacher. And when they walked out, it was everyone. I mean, they were drawing on the history of the United Mine Workers. They were drawing on a proud working class tradition in West Virginia. But they have now set ablaze the whole country, a string of workers walking off the job and winning in the education sector, then against the Marriott hotels, then against Stop and Shop this spring, enabled the General Motors workers to say, forget it.
What makes an action a victorious action? And how would activists apply it to get the public into the street over climate change policy?
What does it take in this moment to tackle the largest crisis there is. The most important weapon that workers have is the ability to withdraw their labor and walk off the job. Strategic disruption in strategic sectors, in strategic geographies. And by the way, where the General Motors workers are going on strike is basically a map of the electoral swing states. We've got to get the American working class into and embracing the Green New Deal. And the way to do that is to guarantee not just a good job. There's a different set of words we have to use. Mm-hmm. We have to specifically say to the American worker, you will hold the exact standard that you have working in the fossil fuel sector right now in the clean economy sector. And to do that, we've got to flip the American taxpayer subsidies currently going to the fossil fuel industry to subsidize the jobs and the livelihoods of workers in a clean economy. And we've got to talk about that really honestly and then build the power to shift those subsidies.
Does the movement have to address the issue that strikes and this redistribution of wealth and these huge government programs are fundamentally anti-capitalist?
Right. If we turn on, you know, Fox News.
The Green New Deal, it's a watermelon. Green on the outside, deep, deep red communist on the inside.
You hear the same language that we heard during McCarthy period already. But what we need to keep focused on is what is it we're trying to do? We're trying to create a new deal. And to get to the first new deal took massive strikes. To get to a new deal so that life on this planet can continue and flourish means we're going to need a second wave of massive strikes. And I think we're seeing the beginning of that realization. Part of why I'm entering this debate is because I spent my first 10 years as an organizer running environmental campaigns. Hmm. And then I shifted into the trade union movement full time. And I've long said to people, a reflection of the problem in the American progressive movement is that I, as an organizer, am either working for the environmental movement or I'm working for trade unions, and the Green New Deal is the time to say these are not two different movements. For American workers' children to grow up in a healthy environment in this country, it's going to take American workers walking off the job the way we did in 1933 and 1934 and 1935 and forcing employers to the negotiating table to create a different kind of an economy in this country.
Jane, thank you very much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure being here.
Jane McAlevey is a fellow at the University of California at Berkeley's Labor Center and author of A Collective Bargain, Unions Organizing and the Fight for Democracy, due out in January.
Coming up, the politics of the deal, new and newer.
This is On the Media.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.